Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, early last winter, you may have heard we ran a segment that helped homeowners and excavation contractors get prepared for spring and all the planned outdoor projects involving excavation. And now that April and Call Before You Dig Month has arrived, we're replaying the segment to remind you about a new educational resource and certification program from Call Before You Dig that'll help you ensure any deep dig projects you're planning in the future at home or on the job will roll out safely. Then we're going to tackle the difficult subject of youth suicide with a couple of expert sources from Connecticut Children's Medical System talking about how the risk of suicide is increasing, shockingly, among youths as young as 10 years old. And we're going to learn how this statewide health care network is doing groundbreaking work, identifying the risks and saving lives as a result. And we're going to close tapping a source to address the breaking news that state colleges and universities are resuming in-person classes and activities as early as this summer with a representative of the Connecticut State College and University System and Connecticut Community Colleges walking students through what to expect and what they need to know if they're just beginning their higher education journey or resuming it years later. We'll be right back with those segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. United Illuminating and Southern Connecticut Gas and the Connecticut Natural Gas subsidiaries of Avangrid are urging customers facing financial challenges to contact them to inquire about programs that could help them manage bills, pay down overdue balances, and avoid service interruption when disconnections resume. Utility customers may qualify for a COVID-19 payment program, arrearage forgiveness, a UI matching payment plan, medical protection, energy saving solutions, and assistance managing electricity supply costs. You can reach UI by calling 800-7-CALL-UI or reach SCG by calling 800-659-8299. Well, we're here to meet Anthony Williman. He's the Call Before You Dig call center manager to talk a little bit about a brand new offering for businesses, excavators, homeowners, landscapers, and, well, you'll find out all the folks that can benefit from these services. In cooperation with Pelican Corp, a little over a month ago, Call Before You Dig announced the launch of Education Access, which is an e-learning program for the Call Before You Dig 811 service. So we're going to learn all about that with Anthony. And Anthony, hey, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me.
So first of all, let's circle back because, you know, people are saying, oh, isn't this something, you know, why are we hearing about Call Before You Dig here as we're just moving toward wintertime where presumably there wouldn't be a lot of, you know, landscape excavation, people putting up fences and mailboxes, digging new swimming pools and things like that.
Sure. You bring up a really good point, John. Considering the ground is getting harder and less excavation does happen in the winter months, it's a great opportunity to educate your employees, and excavators have this chance to gain this education and as a reminder through their off time.
Mm-hmm. So it also it would provide some important guidance to even, you know, casual folks that are maybe planning a project around their house or maybe getting in on some of the last few days of pleasant weather and unfrozen ground, maybe to make that fence post repair or do some other kind of landscape prep.
Absolutely. So the education course that we provide is free and offered to anybody that wants to take it. It includes a lot of good information for not only homeowners, but excavators and the utilities. And to expand that information and what you need to understand about the Call Before You Dig program, even as a homeowner and hiring contractors to do work, it's good for them to have an understanding of the regulations, the rules that they need to follow, so that those contractors are doing what they're supposed to.
Great. Well, let's stop you right there and kind of roll the chapter back a little bit to help folks understand and remind those who may not have heard one of our latest rounds of broadcasts or announcements about Call Before You Dig about this program. It does have a nationwide implications, but Connecticut was really among, if not one of the first states to implement this practice after a tragedy that happened right here in the Naugatuck Valley, right?
Absolutely. So in the 1980s, there was an incident in Derby, Connecticut, where a gas line was damaged. That gas was escaping and backed up into a building that actually had a restaurant that was open and doing business. That gas eventually found an ignition source and exploded. There were several fatalities in that incident and several more injured, and it was a real learning experience for not only Connecticut, but like you said, the nation as a whole. So immediately, Call Before You Dig, efforts were made in Connecticut to establish us as an organization so that excavators can communicate with utilities when they're digging in the ground.
And since then, this program, as you mentioned, has really expanded nationwide. And 811 is now sort of almost as universally known, especially among commercial contractors and landscapers and folks that do excavation, as 911 is or 411 is to regular household members. Right?
You're absolutely right. So as time went on, and more states kind of pulled into the Call Before You Dig model, they kind of came together and put their heads together to come up with a number, the 811 number, as a nationally recognized contact number that you can use for Call Before You Dig services alike.
Hmm. Well, what do people need to know about Call Before You Dig as it stands today? Because this is no longer an option, and violating the Call Before You Dig situation, especially in the case that you do happen to strike and damage some sort of underground utility, no longer just goes with some sort of a warning or a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, the main thing that I really like to educate people with, and especially ones that have never heard about Call Before You Dig or know very little about them, is that it's a free service. It's a service that we provide as to make a communication link between somebody that's going to be digging in the ground and to the utilities that own assets in the ground. So Call Before You Dig, we don't actually go out and do the markings, and I think that's one thing that's really misunderstood about the program as a whole. But again, we really serve as that communication link. We're here to answer a phone call or take a ticket that's processed through our e-ticket system online and then communicate all of that information to the utilities directly. Those utilities directly will communicate back to you in either marking those underground assets or potentially clearing the area of conflict.
So does that mean that if a homeowner or a contractor does their due diligence and makes that 811 call in Connecticut to Call Before You Dig, they may actually see more than one utility representative marking utility lines? Or is that all kind of done through a clearinghouse or a contractor and only one person comes out to make those markings?
Yeah, so good question. Connecticut has several utility owners in our state, and there's one that's a contract locator. A contract locator is a hired vendor from the utility, so the contract locator might go out and mark out a few different utilities at one time, but then you would have other municipalities that would come in that are not covered by those contractors. So essentially, depending on the area that you're in, if you're in a more rural area, you probably have less utilities. If you live, you know, maybe in some city limits or bigger cities like Hartford or New Haven, you're going to see a lot more utilities on your ticket and more people coming from those utilities to mark out their assets.
Well, Anthony, as the Call Before You Dig call center manager, have you been doing this for quite a while?
I have. Well, I've been a manager for almost 5 years now. And even before that, I was actually in the call center answering phone calls and worked my way up as a supervisor.
So do you kind of anecdotally think that it's more important than ever to continue to remind people about Call Before You Dig, because over the past 5+ years that you've been working for the organization, a lot of people may be moving into or relocating to new homes where they might not even know if utility lines exist going into or out of their property, or at least where they are.
Sure. Great point, John. That's one thing that I think my neighbors during the spring and summertime, they kind of got sick of me reminding them if they were going to be digging in the ground to call before you dig. And it's something that I do even more than just in my neighborhood. I've always educated contractors, from ones that are digging, landscapers or a utility excavator. Educating them is one of the joys that I really find in being the call center manager. Mm-hmm. And I hope that loops us right back around to education access. And,
yeah, I was going to say, now you've been replaced by a machine.
And that's okay with me, because we're still going to do the in-person education at
counseling,
some point,
sure.
Hopefully when we get through this pandemic.
Yeah, yeah. So what's going on with this new video program? How did this come together?
Sure. So Call Before You Dig, we've actually been talking about this for a little bit. And getting into 2020, it was going to be one of our focuses. It just coincidentally came just before a pandemic hit us. Mm-hmm. And that really put a catalyst behind our efforts to really get this education access online and available to people.
And this was something that did not come at a cost to utility ratepayers or even Call Before You Dig, right? This was something supported by a grant?
It was. So we have a federal grant that's called, it's our PHMSA grant. So that was supplied to us. We Call Before You Dig applies for these grants, and these grants are done, you know, throughout the state. It's not just Call Before You Dig, that organization that benefits from it. It's other one calls, they participate in those grants as well. And essentially we just kind of outline what kind of funds we would need and what we're trying to do with it. And they've been so gracious to be able to help fund this effort to make an education access.
Hmm. So I imagine you have previewed, if not frequently recommended in the past few weeks, the excavator education course. Tell us more about it and what people can expect to see and learn when they sign up to take that module.
Yeah, education access, it's readily available on the Call Before You Dig website, so cbyd.com. If you go to that website, you'll see a tab towards the middle of the page that says excavator education. So going there, again, it's a free service that we provide, so it doesn't cost you anything. You can register there, and it's an easy platform that you can use as you go through some interactive chapters. It goes from, you know, an overview of Call Before You Dig organization and where we originated from and where we're at now, and then going through the e-ticket process and how to submit a ticket online or calling into the center. We touch on education of working around gas lines and other utilities, as well as rounding out all of the regulations that we educate on and best practices that come around the Call Before You Dig program.
And although you call it an excavator education course, for folks that may not have been on the interview early on, it's for anybody who's really digging in the ground much more below the level of, say, you know, replanting a potted plant or something, right?
Sure. I mean, even using myself as an example, I've honestly never been an excavator myself, but I have all this knowledge and I'm able to educate other people when I see the opportunity present itself. So if it's utility personnel, and you might not be an excavator at the utility employer that you work for, but having that information and having the knowledge behind Call Before You Dig helps. You might do other parts of your job and planning an excavation or working with the excavators that do that at your company. Even being a homeowner and hiring a contractor, like I mentioned before, it's good information for a homeowner to have, especially if there's a larger project, you know, the printing of a swimming pool or something like that. That's something that's good knowledge that they can use, and you know, potentially quiz their contractors and making sure they're doing what they're supposed to and having a call before you dig ticket.
And the fact that you know, especially now coming into the winter season, a lot more folks in the trades and such, as well as homeowners, may have a lot more time on their hands. So this is a great way for them to kind of study up in their pajamas or on a weekend or on an evening when nothing else is going on. And I guess it's a program that you don't have to just view once. Once you register for it, you can look it up again as a reminder once spring starts rolling around.
Yes, thanks for hitting on that, because the platform that we've built it off of allows you to start and stop at your own pace. So if you don't have the entire 3 hours, which is about what it takes to go through the program, if you don't have 3 hours right then to dedicate it, you know, you can do a half hour at a time or even an hour chunk of it. And yes, sitting at home and being able to do it, you know, while sitting comfortably on your couch, is a good option.
Great. Well, in closing, Anthony, I guess anyone in business, large or small, is always looking to keep their company top of mind with the consumers that may use them. And that being said, for those who are in more commercial and landscaping and excavating businesses, I would imagine being able to add to their marketing that they're a certified call before you dig excavator education certified vendor gives them a little bit of a leg up or a promotional gold star as they are trying to compete with others for business.
Yeah, I think if any time an excavator can promote that they are following the rules and they have the knowledge for call before you dig safety, that's absolutely a leg up.
Very good. Well, Anthony, I really appreciate you taking the time this morning. Anthony Willemain is the Call Before You Dig call center manager, and we're talking about their new Call Before You Dig online education access programs. The excavator education course is available now, which covers all kinds of business, including the one call rules, regulations, safe digging practices, and more. And it ensures that a consistent message is delivered to all users. This is a straightforward, interactive presentation that's engaging and provides certification upon successful completion of the curriculum. If you need to know more, just go to Call Before You Dig. That's CBYD.com. And we'll leave you at that. Anthony, thank you so much for your time this morning, and have a great and safe holiday.
Thank you so much, Sean.
Well, from a radio guy whose biggest leap to technology came from tape to digital, it's pretty interesting that I'm utilizing a new conferencing media for the first time this morning with a couple of guests who I've come to know because I've had the honor of working with them a little over a month ago. I'm talking about Dr. Stephen Rogers, who's an attending physician for the Division of Emergency Medicine and Medical Director for Emergency Behavioral Health Services at Connecticut Children's. He also does research and is part of the Connecticut Children's Injury Prevention Center. I've also got the executive director of the center on the line, Kevin Borup, who is with the Office for Community Child Health and assistant professor in pediatrics at the UConn School of Medicine, along with all the important work he is doing at Connecticut Children's. And as we said in the introduction, we're talking about tackling a really tough subject, but we hope you'll stick with us. We're going to be talking about youth suicide prevention and awareness today, and we're talking about it because as I heard from these two gentlemen during a webcast that I did with them, that Connecticut right now, and perhaps the nation, is facing a youth suicide epidemic of proportions that Stephen and Kevin had not previously seen in their careers. And I wanted to bring that conversation to a wider audience. I appreciate you both coming on the program this morning. So, Stephen, let's start with you. You're on the front lines there at Connecticut Children's. You encounter a lot of these young people when they come through the door. Let's talk about what you're seeing in terms of the concerns of youth suicide, the presentation of suicidal thoughts or even attempts, and what's going on there with you that you want folks to know.
Yeah, thanks. So again, my name's Steve Rogers, and I'm both a physician in the emergency department at Connecticut Children's and also the medical director for emergency behavioral health services. So I sort of straddle both of those positions. So I do see kids clinically on a regular basis that are coming in behavioral health crisis, but also overseeing the services that we provide them. And it's been very challenging over the past year. We've seen kids coming into the emergency department, what I would say, in more deeper crisis. And currently we're seeing a lot of behavioral health patients coming in with suicidal behaviors or suicide risk to the point where, you know, we're what we describe as surging. We take care of kids 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and nobody gets turned away, even when we have large volumes. And so it can be quite a challenge when we have 30 to 40 patients with behavioral health issues that are awaiting inpatient placement or community-based services that are full. Lots and lots of our inpatient units are full. Lots of our community services are overwhelmed right now, and that's all because we're seeing more and more kids in deeper crisis. So it's been very challenging. It seems to be getting even more challenging, despite some of people's fears about the pandemic coming to an end soon. I think we're seeing a backlash of patients who have been struggling for quite some time with isolation and fear about the virus itself.
Stephen, does that mean that, you know, their mental situation has gotten to the point where, you know, they may have been suffering to the extent with some sort of a clinical issue without it being addressed, that it, you know, the fuse has grown so short that they're now on the verge of or thinking about taking their own lives?
Yeah, I mean, I can't provide any sort of hard evidence or data to support that. But certainly, I think it's it's multiple factors. I think everybody's been experiencing increased anxiety and potentially increased depression over the past year. And then schools are reopening, which is more stressful, and the fact that they've been isolated for so long. I think lots of kids haven't been coming in just because their fear of getting the infection or getting the virus. But the reality is I feel safer in our hospital than I do at the grocery store. So Connecticut Children's has taken all the appropriate precautions to make sure that patients are safe. So they shouldn't fear coming to the hospital, whether it's for a medical issue or a behavioral health one, because we are going to keep them safe.
I think the real gut punch for me in preparing for our previous visit on the webcast was when I was looking over the statistics and the fact that concerns of suicidal thoughts and possible actions are starting to manifest at so much of a younger age. If you had suggested to me in a casual conversation that there are concerns that are perpetuating the need for screening for children as young as 9 or 10 years old, it would have been hard for me to believe. Can you speak to the why this is such an issue for young people that are so young?
Yeah, it was back in 2014 that suicide became the second leading cause of death in the age range of 10 to 14 year olds. It used to be the third, but it worked its way up to the second place. And that's pretty motivating and pretty scary for us. We want to make sure that all kids are getting the care that they need. So certainly started to plant the seeds of us doing universal screening in the ED. And so Kevin, do you want to comment a little bit about how we developed the program?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. And thanks for having us, John.
Sure.
You know, the Injury Prevention Center, you know, here we began years ago looking at the issue of suicide and suicide prevention. What could we do about it? When we began, along with Dr. Rogers, seeing this incredible increase of kids coming to our emergency department in crisis. And Dr. Rogers and I have worked, you know, hand in hand over the years in figuring out what is the best approach to address what we're seeing. And he and I have been active in looking at best practices around the country, seeing what are other institutions doing. And we finally settled on really trying to ramp up our ability to identify kids before they were in crisis. And that involved in putting in place a screening tool. And as we worked on this issue and we got everyone on board at the hospital to say, yes, this is something we should do, the Joint Commission, which is the accrediting body for hospitals, came out with some guidance, their national patient safety goals, mandating that screening be done at least for behavioral health patients coming into the hospital. And Dr. Rogers, myself, and a whole group of others at the hospital said, well, now it's time that we go above and beyond that, and we're going to screen every child who comes in through our emergency department for suicide risk. And we were able to do that in a rapid fashion, you know, a little bit before the advent of COVID, about a year before that. And that rapid evolution, we're still working on. We're working on expanding it to other locations within the hospital to make it more universal. And in addition, really thinking about how do we continue to do and improve our work when it comes to connecting kids who are identified with services. And Steve, that's probably too much. But that's my brief response to, you know, why are we where we're at right now? I think the other thing I should note, John, is that, you know, at the Injury Prevention Center, the reason why a children's hospital has an Injury Prevention Center is that, you know, preventable injuries and violence are the number one way that kids die in our society. Mm-hmm. And we need to be working on this issue, and those issues include suicide prevention,
which is 100% preventable. Gentlemen, let me just ask you to pause there for a minute and ask our listeners to stick with us, because we're going to come back and talk with them and you a little bit to them about what they might expect if they are coming to Connecticut Children's with a young person who will inevitably go through the suicide screening, and how well that is successfully identifying those who are not coming to the ER and to Connecticut Children's for mental health or behavioral health issues, but you're yet still discovering that you might be able to provide them with some assistance because of suicidal thoughts. We'll be back with Dr. Stephen Rogers and Kevin Borup, representing Connecticut Children's, in just a minute. Stay with us. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Hey, the International Festival of Arts and Ideas is devoted to creating programming with and for its communities. And one of its flagship programs is the Ideas Series, which brings together vital thinkers and doers to engage with national and international issues through the microcosm of the culturally rich, diverse, and complex communities of Greater New Haven. The festival just announced its Ideas Series for 2021, centering on the act of imagination imagination with panels that grapple with the questions and discourse happening in our homes and on our streets. Plan to attend virtually to hear from speakers addressing issues from world building to abolition, disability justice to melting ice, mutual aid to people-centered cities. Ideas 2021 has it all. For more information on each event, just go to artidea.org/ideas. Well, thanks for sticking with us, talking about a tough subject, youth suicide, but as we're already hearing, second leading cause of death in young people here in Connecticut and across the country. We're so pleased to be with Dr. Stephen Rogers. He's an attending physician with the Division of Emergency Medicine and the medical director at the Emergency Behavioral Health Services for Connecticut Children's. He also does research for the Connecticut Children's Injury Prevention Center, and he is an associate professor at the University of Connecticut School of Medicine. We also have Kevin Borup, who is an assistant professor in pediatrics at the UConn School of Medicine and the executive director of that Injury Prevention Center and the Office for Community Child Health at Connecticut Children's. A lot of info there, but folks need to know who they're listening to here and how, you know, the roles that you guys play, because we're talking about something that is, as we said before the break, 100% preventable, and that is suicide. So tell us a little bit about the numbers of potential suicide risks that you're actually catching in young people coming through Connecticut Children's who are not necessarily presenting with a behavioral health issue as their main focus of at arrival time.
Yeah, thanks, John. You know, so anybody that's coming to our emergency department, their child, if they are 10 years and older, will be screened with a validated screener called the ASQ, which stands for Ask Suicide Questions. That's a real simple, real brief suicide screener. There's four questions, and you answer a fifth if there's concerns. Takes less than 40 seconds, maybe 30 seconds or so. but it's a very powerful tool in helping us identify kids who are at risk who may not have otherwise been identified. We also screen all patients who come to the ED who are there for a behavioral health concern, regardless of their age, because we want to make sure that if they have suicide risk, we keep them safe and we provide them the services that they need. But if, for example, you came to the ED with your 12 or 13-year-old son or daughter who had a sprained ankle or an ankle injury, they would be asked these questions. And one of the parents' fears oftentimes is, you know, are they too young or are you going to plant the seeds of suicidal thoughts in their heads? And the answer is no. By talking about suicide, you actually can reduce the risk of your child dying by suicide. And so it's actually the screener itself is helpful because it helps identify us as a place where kids can get help with suicidal thoughts. And it opens the conversation or dialogue with the parents. And we're hoping that they learn that they can ask their kids about suicidal thoughts and make sure that they're not experiencing them. Or if they are, that they get them the help that they need. So in terms of numbers, John, we, you know, over the first year of our universal screening program, we saw a rate of about 16% positive screens, and that's a pretty big number. That includes the behavioral health patients. So if we just look at non-behavioral health patients, meaning medical concerns coming to the ED, we were about 5% positive rate. So that 5% of kids that we identified may not have otherwise been identified or given services. So that's one of our real successes right there. One of the concerning things we've seen over the past 4 to 5 months, starting in October, those numbers changed significantly. And so we're now seeing rates in the 20 to 25% range in terms of positive screens or kids having suicidal thoughts or behaviors. And for the medical-only kids, we're seeing an increase from 5% to 8% on average. And that increase is very concerning. And I think says about kids struggling with behavioral health issues and thoughts about suicide. So we're trying to figure out how to respond to that. How do we get those kids the help they need? But more importantly, how do we prevent them from having further thoughts about suicide and struggling with behavioral health issues?
Well, as someone who's engaged in research, how does the community of peers in the research world, you know, aggressively go after and try to solve that problem?
Yeah, that's a tough one. So we do have national goals, and like Kevin mentioned earlier, the national patient safety goals of the Joint Commission can really affect change. And really, it's about supporting suicide prevention efforts at a state and national level. For example, in the state of Connecticut, we don't have what many other states have, which is either an office or a sponsored program to further suicide prevention efforts. We do rely on the Connecticut Suicide Advisory Board, but that it's not a state-funded project. You know, for example, New York has the Office of Suicide Prevention with a subset of Office for Adolescent Suicide Prevention dedicated to working on statewide efforts. And we would really like to see that happen here in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the last few minutes that we have, I'd just like to ask both of you to weigh in and speak directly to parents, siblings, educators, loved ones, neighbors who may have some concern for a young person. As you pointed out earlier, Stephen, bringing up suicide is actually a preventative tool, but it goes way beyond that. It goes to asking the correct question and asking it directly. Can you just articulate what the best way is to actually break the ice and ask the hard question of a young person?
And John, if I could, I'll break in there a little bit to talk about this. I mean, stigma that Dr. Rogers talked about earlier is a huge issue. And when we talk about what is something that we all can do to reduce suicide risk and suicide rate, it is exactly as you're talking about, to talk about it. For parents, community members, teachers, to talk about mental health, to talk about it more openly, to reduce stigma of the entire topic, and to become educated and trained on asking those questions about how are you feeling, and how do you introduce the topic? You know, you look like you've been having a hard time lately. Are you thinking of hurting yourself? That's a question that can be asked. And there is training available out there. Both Dr. Rogers and I are trained in QPR, but there are plenty of mental health trainings that can be brought to community organizations and schools. And Steve, did you want to add to that?
No, I think you really summarize it well, Kevin. You know, it's a matter of just being very direct and asking people, are they thinking about killing themselves? And that's a hard question to ask. But once you start to ask it, and if anybody discovers somebody with suicide risk and you get them the help that they need, it's really reassuring. We should all be asking our loved ones and our friends if we have concerns about signs of being depressed or isolating themselves or struggling with things that they normally could handle well. So, again, I think you summarized it well. We need to talk about it and normalize the conversation so that people aren't afraid to express their concerns as well.
And John, if you notice, even I, when I said it, probably said it not inartfully when I said hurting yourself. And Dr. Rogers went right in and said, you know, are you thinking about killing yourself? And that direct way of asking, the most direct way that you can do it is the best, better way.
Excellent. Well, our time is short, gentlemen, but thank you so much for your information and resource this morning. It's important to note as well, and kudos to Connecticut Children's for being probably the first and probably the only health system in Connecticut right now that is adopted a policy of doing the suicide screening for young people age 10 and up, whether they're coming in for a behavioral health issue or not. I guess it's also important in closing to point out that those who come to Connecticut Children's who are deemed to need additional behavioral or mental health support, that is not necessarily a direct function of Connecticut Children's, but you do have a very robust referral network that is stands ready to jump in and partner and assist in this in that respect. Isn't that right, Kevin?
Yeah, and Steve can add in, but absolutely. What we're prepared to do is to provide the best care we can to children and to bring it to them or bring them to the appropriate resources.
Great.
John, I would just like, I'd like to just include as we close things up, if parents out there, if you or your child seem to be in crisis, you have a few options. You can call 211 here in Connecticut, and that will connect you directly to our mobile crisis line. Or you can actually text CT to 741-741. And if it's an emergency and you feel like your child is unsafe, you should call 911 or text 911.
Very good. Thank you, gentlemen. Once again, it's been a pleasure to circle back with you and try to bring your important resource to this broader audience here on the award-winning For the People. Dr. Stephen Rogers and Kevin Bora, both representing Connecticut Children's and the Injury Prevention Center at Connecticut Children's. Thank you so much for your assistance this morning, and hopefully we'll be talking with you again soon. Well, as promised, we're wrapping up with Dr. Duncan Harris. He is the CEO of Capital Community College, and we're going to be talking about the growing importance of the role of community colleges. Not that it wasn't already important here in Connecticut, but now that the COVID situation is getting a little bit better, and all Connecticut colleges and universities are going to apparently be resuming a heightened level of in-person classes and activities beginning as early as this summer, it was a good time to bring him in and talk not only about that, but about the important and increasing role community colleges are going to play in helping everyone get better educated here in the state, along with boosting our economic development and our economy through workforce development, especially in the advanced manufacturing arena, something we talk a lot about here on For the People. So, Dr. Harris, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, glad to be here. Glad to be here.
Very exciting times here. Earlier this week, we saw the governor surrounded by academic leaders from around the state, public and private, all talking about the exciting prospect of lifting the gates to some extent, at least figuratively speaking, and bringing back the in-person experience of higher education in the state. Before we start talking specifically about community colleges, what can you tell our listeners about what you heard out of that press conference, and maybe give them a little reassurance that now's the time?
Yeah, I think the community colleges in our system see our role as locking arms with the governor's agenda on bringing the state back, post COVID. Things will be done certainly in a safe manner. As we see our vaccination rates increase in the state, the community colleges, find ourselves, ready to have individuals return to campus, to pursue and advance their careers. We know that's what's needed right now, and we've begun to build and plan out our summer to help, accommodate and support, the statewide plan in that regard.
Mm-hmm. How has Capital Community College and the network of community colleges here in Connecticut managed through the worst of things and the dips and peaks of the COVID year that we've had?
Yeah, it's interesting. I distinctly recall, I guess over a year ago now, March 12th, when we shut down campus. And so it's been a little over a year now. We our faculty rallied. They built curriculum and deploy instructional pedagogy to be able to continue to offer, learning opportunities to citizens in the state. You know, we graduated a class last year. We had a fully virtual graduation last year, you know, based on where we were, you know, in May. But, you know, the campuses have all put safety first. You know, this past year, we were about 80% of our classes were fully online. We had about another 20% that based on, kind of the instructional requirements, pedagogy, licensure, things like that, that we were able to accommodate a campus with smaller class sizes that incorporated, you know, masking and distancing and things like that. We anticipate being at about 50% fully online this fall, and we'll continue to grow into that number. It might exceed that a little bit. But once again, putting safety first, you know, in all instances. And so, you know, once again, our entire system, I think did a phenomenal job of continuing to provide learning opportunities and career opportunities, but at the same time, being ever mindful of the pandemic and putting safety first of our faculty, staff, and students.
Well, as I mentioned before we went on the air, I'm a product of a community college education for the most part myself, and a big fan of the quality of education and environment that students can enjoy no matter what age they are. I was sort of a returning student because I resumed a brief college career after a number of years in the workforce, and it was just such a rich and enriching experience for me, and I'm so glad that we were able to actually bring you on the program to focus on community colleges, because today here in Connecticut, community colleges in many respects are leading the way in supporting our workforce here. Let's talk a little bit about how Capital and the network of Connecticut community colleges is responding to the need for jobs in the fields that are demanding those jobs right now.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I'll give you a couple of practical examples. A few weeks ago, maybe a month or two ago at this point, Eversource came to Capital, and they were looking, they had some need around, line workers and other individuals to staff their
glut of retirements coming. Glut of people aging out of the line worker jobs.
Great company, great jobs, benefits, et cetera. And so we were able to stand up a program, you know, partnering with them. We were able to kind of create a pipeline for them to vet talent. And, we fully enrolled students in that program. The other thing about Capital, we're one of the most diverse community colleges in New England. And so many of the companies that are seeking to ensure, pools of diverse talent, come to our community colleges. And once again, we were able to meet that need for Eversource. I'm pleased to share that you mentioned manufacturing Capital. Once again, we're launching into a manufacturing program in order to do our part in meeting the need articulated by manufacturing companies in the state. And so we're launching a manufacturing program in a few weeks. The hands-on part will take place at our partner, Prince Tech, and then all the theory components will be, done at the college. But once again, in response to the need and numbers and projections, our state's community colleges are certainly responding, ensuring that they're the workforce talent. And it's a great match. You've got folks looking to change careers in many instances, or you've got, kind of traditional age students perhaps coming out of high school looking for viable careers, and we're able to meet that need for both unique populations. And so it's an exciting time. I think, tying it back to the governor's conference this week, everybody's locking arms. It's been a tough year for the state, but I think that we're coming out of it, and we're coming out of it together. And all the agencies are working closely with our corporate partners and community-based organizations and civic leaders to make sure that we come out of this pandemic even better potentially than we went in. There's been some things that we talked about as it relates to COVID gifts, which are things that we developed during this period where we've been, had to be very innovative and design new, efficiencies be able to learn how to work remote and connect with partners across the country and all kinds of things. So there's some things that we'll take out of this that actually make us stronger, I think.
All right. Well, before we wrap up and move into our music day on our music stations and our talk day on our talk station, we'll tell folks once again, we're visiting with Dr. Duncan Harris. He's CEO of Capital Community College in Hartford, the old G. Fox building right there downtown. And he's representing community colleges here across Connecticut who are beginning to ramp up and get back to in-person business come summertime. Exciting time for, I'm sure, not just the students, but the faculty and even the support staff as well, wandering empty halls or not able to work as they had given the COVID situation. So a few moments ago, you mentioned returning students to the workforce. And while it's plain to see that community colleges are a great way for younger people coming out of high school to maybe begin to get into the college experience, or for folks looking for a very economic way to supplement other college programming by taking classes at community colleges, it's also a great place for 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds and 50-year-olds and even beyond that to come back to or even start a college opportunity or a college situation. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, our average age at Capital is 28. I mean, so that's the average. That's the middle of the group. And so, yeah, that's exactly to what you were speaking to. And there's a broad spectrum. We believe certainly in lifelong learning. Many people, as a result of the pandemic, may have had their career uprooted, and they find themselves, wondering what's next. I think that perhaps that next step might be at the community college. And we have, credit programs. We have non-credit programs. We have programs that individuals can take from home, and you're able to be home while your kids get off the bus at 3:30, like me, and still be able to advance and acquire academic credentials that allow you to find employment, that allow you to provide for yourself and your families. And that's what we're really about. And once again, we have a whole wide variety. I think in some regard, you mentioned you attended community college in California. I think that, there's been a statement about our community colleges in terms of best kept secret. And those days certainly are over, right? And secrets aren't a good thing in this instance. Mm. And I thank you for helping us let the citizens of Connecticut know that we're here for them. We're here for them at a time where they may need us more than they have in the past. And once again, our doors are open, and we'll be ready to support them in supporting themselves and their families. That's what the middle name is. It's community. We're all community colleges, and that's what we're about, and that's what we do, and we do it well.
Yep. And to say nothing about the caliber of the educators that you bring to the table to support and educate all of the students, regardless of age or college experience. A fantastic team of folks, a first-class educational opportunities available here at Connecticut Community Colleges. And we're so pleased to meet and welcome Dr. Duncan Harris, who's CEO of Capital Community College up in Hartford, representing the entire Connecticut Community College system. Dr. Harris, how can people learn more about Capital and what you have to offer up there?
Yeah, let me give you a couple of web addresses. And so we've got our web address is capitalcc.edu. But individuals, I know that you have a broad range of listeners. We've got 12 community colleges, and we're strategically located to be close. Individuals can also not have to drive it. They could take classes online now. We've got a lot. We developed a lot in that area, certainly like many others over the course of the last year. And there's information. It is www.ct.edu. And you can get to all of the schools through that webpage.
Well, thank you very much. Dr. Duncan Harris is CEO of Capital Community College. Thank you, doctor. And we hope to be talking with you again soon. We'll be right back. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.